Hello, everyone. Welcome to the On Earth podcast. I am your host, Samantha Tuttle. I'm so excited to share this next episode with all of you. I had so much fun interviewing two of my favorite people, Trace Bell and Tina Olson. If the name Trace Bell sounds familiar, it could be because you've listened to the Robcast conversations he's had with his dad, author, and spiritual teacher Rob Bell. Now, Trace, after giving his energy during college to studying political science, realized he wanted to become a spiritual teacher, and he now describes himself as a transformation consultant and consciousness teacher. His partner, Tina is a certified professional coach and an energy intuitive who uses her gift of relatable analogies to bring complex topics into discernible view. And you will definitely pick up on what that means in this interview. Together, they started an organization called Open Aware, where they teach courses and offer all kinds of opportunities for people to explore ways to grow and expand their consciousness. There's also an opportunity to be a part of their unique online community. By the way, if you are new to the topic of spiral dynamics, you're going to hear me mention different colors during our conversation. I actually have an upcoming episode where I do a deeper dive into spiral dynamics, but for this episode, all you need to know is that the various levels within spiral dynamics are given different colors. Today, we're just going to jump right into the topics of spiral dynamics and quantum physics and consciousness. You're in for a real treat. This is so cool. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. I know that you guys have a lot on your plate these days with your new startup, and to take the time to kind of help my little fledgling podcast get started, this is a joy. It really is. I'm excited.
We love nothing more than getting to connect with you. So thank you so much for inviting us.
That's awesome. So this is Trace Bell and Tina Olson. You started this program called Open Aware.
Yeah.
And before that, I guess I met you, what was it, about a year and a half ago?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just over a year ago. I took your Living the Spiral class, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, were we one of the last groups that took it in person?
You were. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like maybe a couple groups after you.
Yeah, but I think we did it a total of 14 times in person. And if I remember correctly, you were group like 12. So
okay.
Yeah.
So now anybody can take it at any time.
Yeah.
Because it's an online course.
Online, self-paced. We recorded, believe it or not, like 25 videos or something crazy.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think it was something like some of them were really short videos.
Yeah, we got to the heart of like, what about this was so powerful? And how can we bring as much of that to an online individual experience as possible? Because obviously you're going to miss the community. Like there's
exactly
ifs, ands, or buts about, you know, the fact that the people who got to do it together got to connect and share.
Right.
Really powerful. And we love that. We're also just starting to have other demands on our time. And so one of the things that we did is we teach each stage, but then we come back with a video later in the week before we teach the next stage of like the way the stage has impacted our life, our personal favorite resources, like trying to add in more of the like personalized flavor. So it didn't feel so much just like an academic endeavor because really,
yeah.
Going through spiral dynamics and looking at it through the lens of your own life is truly, if you take the invitation, a transformative process.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think I was introduced to spiral dynamics about 10 years ago. Wow. And I'm still kind of, and of course it existed before that. I mean, obviously people were talking about it before that. But I'm still, are you shocked that there's still a lot of people that have never heard of it before? I mean, there's still a lot of people that have no idea what we're even talking about. So I guess we maybe should explain that. So like, how do you typically explain like to a person or articulate to a person that's completely new to spiral dynamics? They're like, what is that? What do you usually say? Because there's a lot to it. Like, do you have like your canned answer of what to say to somebody who's like, what is spiral dynamics?
Yeah, we usually describe it as a human development model that maps how humanity has grown over time and how we as individuals grow throughout our lives. That's really the way, I mean, that's something I've explored a lot, is like how to succinctly describe it and what's the best words to use. But I think calling it a human development model that maps two really important things: the history of humanity and how we've all collectively evolved, and then our own personal individual evolution in our own lives.
Yeah, and it really feels like it can be important to communicate that it's all based on a premise that shifts in consciousness or when there's been new complexity added to the human experience, whether that's on a collective level or whether that's an individual growing up. It requires a leap in the way that we view the world and the way we're holding things.
Yeah.
And to us, that idea of a leap is so profoundly important right now, because it's obvious that there's so much more complexity that's been added to humanity in the last decade, two decades, with the technological advancements that really we're only seeing the beginnings of. I mean, AI is a whole new world. Kids are getting 3D printers for their birthday. Like, it's a whole different ball game. And so with climate crises, with COVID, with continuing to have such seemingly barbaric things like Russia invading Ukraine happening, it's like, how can we even get our heads around this mess? And that can leave us feeling very helpless, hopeless, confused. And instead, if we see it as, oh, a number of times, not a ton, but in this case, we would say it could be categorized into about 7 times over the course of humanity, thousands and thousands of years of humanity, there's been this significant of an addition of complexity that humans had to make a leap. And so when we name the leaps that happened before now, we're kind of better able to put some markers into what might be the leap that's being asked of us now.
Yeah, because you can't deny that something's happening, something's changing, there's a shift. We are moving forward and it's going to look different. The potential is totally, it's just right there. It's just right there for everybody. I mean, I two things that Spiral Dynamics did for me personally was, one, it helped me understand myself better. And it was almost a little bit like the Enneagram, where I was like, I understood myself. Oh, that's why I do that. But it also helped me understand others better. I was like, oh, that's how they're wired right now. That's the lens through which they are seeing the world in right now. And especially in such a divided world right now, it helps me be a little bit more patient with people and with where they are. And I think that's what sort of has happened for me. But your class sort of added another layer in that you sort of helped us look at ourselves at each level and figure out where are we living in that level in a healthy way, to be more intentional about adding health to each of those individual levels. And I thought that was really cool, because I think most people, they just think of it as a linear experience where, oh, I've already gone through beige, I've already gone through this, I've already gone, I'm at green, or I'm at, you know, whatever. And then none of the rest of them even matter. But when you begin talking about, you know, transcending and including, and, you know, all the language that you guys love to use, I think it's just a fascinating thing. Are you able to kind of personally look at situations in the world, and are you able to like see things happening like in real time and go, oh, there's some unhealthy purple and blue right there? Or are you able to say, oh, that's pointing to right there, to the leap forward, that's a potential leap forward right there? Are you able to pinpoint things that you're seeing in real time? Because you kind of have to work with it and like be intentional to look through that lens in real time to kind of be able to do that. And I'm not always able to do it myself, but you know, the big ones, the most obvious ones I can, but some of the subtle, more subtle stuff that I don't even see it yet. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we're always making connections and seeing things through the spiral. We'll be seeing things and be like, oh wait, wow, that person really is confusing healthy red with unhealthy red. Like, their conception of power only involves having power over someone else. Like, they don't have a conception of what a healthy empowerment that actually calls people, other people, into their power looks like. And yeah, when we look at like kind of political situations and like Tegan was talking about Russia and Ukraine and geopolitical situations, like, there's we're always making connections and seeing things. We're seeing it in our own life as well. I mean, it's a really, really powerful tool in our own lives for stepping into more health and growth and seeing where there might be some unhealth coming up. I feel like I'm constantly noticing ways in which my unhealth is rearing its head and seeing the invitations that I'm being called into more health. But yeah, it's definitely a big tool in our relationship and the way that we view the world.
Yeah. And I think to your point, like the closer something hits to home, maybe the harder it is to identify the health and unhealth in real time.
Oh,
Russia and Ukraine, you know, clearly there's unhealthy power dynamics going on with, you know, Putin and whatever.
Right.
But then when it's your own life, so it's really helpful to have, we call, you know, any model that we have, any mental model, Enneagram, Myers-Briggs. I mean, those are, like, I think the Enneagram does really well on taking people on a soul journey if you choose to accept that invitation. But really, there's like a personality or an archetypal kind of a
Yeah.
around it, where spiral dynamics is describing components in everybody.
Right.
And at the same time, like, there really is a invitation to go back to the health of some of the really basic stages. So when really, really hard things happen in life, beige is the survival stage. It's all about our needs being met.
Right.
Okay. How can we solidify our basic needs in this moment? And then the next level, purple, is magical. It's interconnectedness. It's oneness. It's spirituality. But a very like raw kind of ancient spirituality, right? Non-religious per se. And so we often take that invitation from purple that life is happening for us, not to us. And I feel like those two things together, making sure we've got our survival needs met. And if not, you know, oh, I'm just really hungry right now. I can't even have this conversation, which unfortunately happens more than we realize, right? That some need is being bypassed. But then going to when it's a harder thing, going, okay, this is happening for me, not to me. I might not feel or believe that right now, but I know it's a core belief of mine. Therefore,
right.
How can I use this to say, oh, wow, like I'm being invited on an empowerment journey. I've never even seen any examples of healthy empowerment around me. You know, like I'm just making up things. Like my mom was too passive or my dad was dictatorial. Those are like memes practically.
Right.
Whatever it is, it invites us to be able to realize like, oh, there is a healthy version of power, even if we've never seen it or we aren't consciously realizing we've seen it. How can I go learn what that might look like? How can I go read, like Brené Brown, for example, talks a lot about leadership and empowerment and how I have power with instead of power over others. Go read someone who's a thought leader in that space, but you wouldn't even necessarily know that's the door you needed to unlock in this moment if you didn't have a framework that was like, okay, I see that in this particular situation, I'm exhibiting unhealthy power. Or I'm feeling disempowered, I wouldn't necessarily even know who to go to or where to go to or what I needed nearly as fast as if you have the spiral to be able to sense of the world and then say, oh, you know, actually right now what I'm really craving is like a new invitation into community. I left my church. I deconstructed from it 5 years ago and I needed the detox. I needed the space, I needed the autonomy, I needed the freedom, I needed to learn who I am so that I can enter a community again from a healthy place of me.
Yeah.
What might that community look like? Maybe the first kind of a community is something around something that has nothing to do with the trip. Maybe it's a tennis group. Who knows?
Right.
But it's like each of these stages has invitations for us. And it feels to me like just incredible shorthand. So that we're not having to just sit around and ruminate or tell every friend we know until one friend like whacks the right mole.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I distinctly remember you talking about, you know, in your own personal life, having to like sort of revisit each color again and sort of like figure it out all over again. And I think that's where the spiral comes is, you know, you come back to it and you're kind of a different version of yourself. And you just sometimes do have to kind of figure it out all over again, especially when you go through big shifts and changes in your life, like a detox from religion or a shift in a relationship or something like that. So yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
Totally get it. Are you seeing, because I know you have worked with bigger groups like companies and that sort of thing. Do you get any feedback from them later on about any impact that the experience had on them? Are they seeing healthier dynamics in their teams at work and the company itself? Because I mean, companies are big organizations and things don't always trickle down very well from the top down. Are you seeing any of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually one of the things we've experienced is that the groups that we've worked with in organizations on the spiral, they had so many insights and revelations and connected so many things. And the spiral really gave them awareness of some of the issues and the dysfunction. But some of the frustration for us and the participants came from if only like one group within the organization is aware of the spiral, aware of these problems and has a language for it, it doesn't actually allow the whole system to change.
Yeah.
So one of the frustrations that we've had is not being able to take it to like the whole company. And even groups that we've worked with have been like, oh man, the leadership team so needs this. Like we really need the people at the top to get this, but there's no way to like force it on them. You know,
yeah.
So it's been amazing to work with these groups and these companies because it really actually like, I mean, I'll speak for myself. It actually surprised me how much it like resonated with them because, you know, when we first started working with organizations, this was the first time we were presenting to an audience that didn't already know the spiral, didn't already know who I was and the work that I had done with my dad on the spiral. So this was like an audience that hadn't heard of me and just, you know, wasn't aware of
this. Didn't necessarily choose personal growth because signed a whole group up for it, you know?
And you're walking in cold turkey, like
like, all right, here we go. Like this is either gonna go great or this is gonna be a face plant. And it like they resonated with it like so strongly. I mean, they were like telling us that they couldn't wait for every Tuesday that they were working with us, and they were saying they joked that it was like therapy for them. And just watching a audience that wasn't aware of the spiral be presented with it and how much they understood it and used it to connect things in their own personal lives and their workplace was just incredible. And it just confirmed for me how important this work is, how important it is for the world to be aware of this. But then, yeah, the frustration came in them becoming aware of a lot of stuff, but then not feeling like there was enough awareness in the organization overall to be able to really make the changes that needed to happen. Because oftentimes, the case is that these groups are more operating in sort of some of the higher stages, but the systems and the structures of the organization are operating at a lower stage. So you have this kind of tension and this dissonance between where the people are at and then where the actual organization is operating from. So really to create like the change that we want to see, we want to be working with the leaders and the people at the top who could actually change the fundamental structure that then changes the whole thing.
Yeah, and if I would add to that, if any of your listeners are responsible for an organization or a large group within an organization, like, stuff like this, whether it's spiral dynamics, whether it's Enneagram coming to organizations, whether it's more strength-based and purpose-based learning, team learning, that is going to become the norm. That's what millennials are demanding. That's what Gen Z is demanding or going to even just expect. And so if we're not looking at these things, what happens is, and this is something that Trace and I have had to get really clear about, do we just want work, aka we'll take the next gig that comes along regardless of what it is?
Yeah.
Or are we really in it for the positive ripple effect and the impact? And of course, for us, the answer is number two. I mean, I say of course, but like, you know, we still have a mortgage to pay as well and everything else, you know?
Right.
But the reason why we're so clear on that is I've been through giving awareness, because that's really all that this is. And same with any other system. It's awareness for you to then feel within your own body, your own being, your own brain, make sense or not of it. Take what feels like it's either aligned or it's an invitation to growth. Leave anything that doesn't feel like it makes sense or isn't intuitively for you. But when you arm people with awareness and they see the toxic system they're in, it is fully expected that a reasonable decision might be to leave. And if they can't leave, they might quiet quit. And the quiet quitting is now a massive epidemic
in
U.S. organizations. And we do want to be agents of change and awareness. We don't want to be agents of passive aggressive quiet quitting. And if people, you know, if people are going to leave, I don't personally have an issue whether or not someone chooses to leave an organization in any way, shape, or form, but I'm not the kind of soul who came in to just undo everything. I came to harmonize and to up-level things. And so if people are leaving because they see, oh, at the end of the day, this organization's core values aren't matched well enough with my core values, but the organization has solid core values. They know who they are. It's just not for me. To me, that's an opportunity for both to up-level by the person leaving, right? Because an organization wants people who are aligned to their core values. And if somebody, right, wrong, or indifferent, has different core values, let them go. Let them find an organization where their core values match. But if basically, Trace and I become just like toxic organization detectors. We're just arming a bunch of people somewhere in the middle of the organization with the information that what's going on around them is mostly toxic. That doesn't fulfill.
Yeah, you're just throwing gasoline on
exactly
on everything. Yeah, yeah.
And so that's one thing that's really interesting, because we've talked about this quite a bit as we've ventured into new particular areas where we're going to be doing work, like, for example, in healthcare. We were very clear of, like, we want to work with people who can actually put this stuff into action and make positive change and also want to be a part of the positive ripple effect, as opposed to taking it to a level of, like, for example, high potential leadership who are currently in lower roles right now, but they're younger or whatever, and just give them the awareness and they see the system, but they have no voice to change the system where they're at right now. And they just become disenchanted or worse off, just disconnected in general about life and about the state of affairs. We have enough of a crisis right now on the planet. We can't afford to be losing people's passion and purpose and a sense of really that there is a possibility that we will come out with an emergence of a better way forward. That is a core of our mission, that it is possible to emerge with a better way forward. So we don't want to just be chopping organizations like mid-limb, you know what I mean? And having the whole thing like start to crumble. That doesn't feel very good.
Yeah. This totally segues into what I wanted to talk about next. I want to lay a little foundation here for a second, and then I want to riff with you guys and kind of see where the conversation goes, because I think this might be kind of fun. When I started this podcast, I began focusing on the reality that there's different ways for us to understand ultimate reality. And when you begin to explore beingness and awareness and consciousness, it kind of shifts your way of viewing the world. Everything kind of shifts. And so one of the things I've been focusing on is how we can become aware of our awareness, aware of our beingness. In other words, right now in the present moment, can you connect to your beingness and then look around you and kind of connect with the beingness that's everywhere around you, and then reach a point where you become aware of, oh my God, it's all the same beingness. The whole thing is beingness. The whole thing is awareness. The whole thing is consciousness. And so on one hand, I've been kind of focusing on that. And then on the other hand, I've been focusing on the intricacies and the science behind wonder and awe. And and it's been really cool. And so I want, that's where my notes were that I wanted to share with you what I found out. And I wrote it down because I didn't want to forget anything. So the first one was experiencing wonder at all makes you feel connected to something bigger than yourself and creates an awareness of who you are among the created order. Duh. We all know that. Like, everybody knows that. The second thing that I discovered was that experiencing wonder and awe, it's in our DNA at a cellular level. Like, we literally evolved as a species to have wonder and awe in order to be able to survive. So it's in our DNA. And then the third one, this is what really rocked me. The third one was that wonder and awe moves us to be less obsessed with ourself and more aware of how we can work together collectively. And it motivates us. They motivate us towards cooperation and unity, and it increases our respect and our care for the collective. So when you start bringing those things together, and I want to take this a step further, and this is where I want to go a little woo with you guys, and I want to see where you guys go with this conversation, because when you begin to study quantum physics and you start looking at the observer and the observed, and you start sort of exploring entanglement, and I'm over here talking about how important it is to be very intentional about experiencing wonder and awe in your daily life, because it does those things. It forces you to become more concerned about the collective, and it forces you to come together as a community. And to do that, obviously, it should help us begin to solve some of these really huge problems in our world. And if we experience wonder at all intentionally on a daily basis, not only is it putting us in touch with our own beingness and beingness in general, and having a better understanding of what ultimate reality is and what who God is or what God is, and you start looking at it through the lens of quantum physics, and the thing that this is what rocked my world, it's the idea that me as the observer is vitally important to the whole thing. And I was wondering, like, I wanted to riff with you on that, because when you began to look at wonder and awe and intentionally experiencing wonder and awe, and you look at it from a quantum physics perspective, what is the potential there? Even through spiral dynamics, like, what is the potential there of what could shift? If we are shifting, if something is happening, if we are moving forward, what part does that play? Because I've been arguing that the stewards of wonder and awe throughout history, who were they? They were the religious leaders and the institutions, right? They were the ones that interpreted what happened in our world. Like, the flood came because the gods up in the sky caused it. And so when you start looking at the history of, for example, the Christian church, they doubled down on the doctrine of original sin in response to Charles Darwin's discovery of evolution. And so to accept Darwin's discovery of evolution calls into question the purpose of Jesus, because Jesus came to save us from a broken world. And Charles Darwin, it was like, if he's true, if what he said and what he discovered is true, then there was never a moment in time or history when the whole thing became broken. And there was never a time in history where the thing was perfect and flawless. So if it was never perfect and it never became broken, what was the point of Jesus? And so the church was like, we are not even going to accept that at all. We're going to double down on these doctrines. And so today you go into these churches and you see outdated theology, outdated hymns, outdated prayers, outdated everything. No one's experiencing wonder and awe in these places. And so these religious leaders and institutions, they've either abandoned, lost, or forgotten how to be good stewards of wonder and awe. And so I think that's a huge missing piece. And I think that we have this amazing potential to be more intentional about experiencing it and see, like, I mean, I threw a lot at you just now, but like when you think about sort of the entanglement of me being intentional and observing this thing, whether it's a sunset or an animal or whatever it is, what is my observation of that doing to that? And how is that merging us together and bringing us into unity and helping us experience that my being and your being is all the same being? I don't know. Where do you guys, does that like light you up at all? Because that's just
150%. Yeah, I had chills like for an extended period of time during that. Do you want to jump in first?
Sure. I'll go first. Yeah. One of the really fascinating things about quantum mechanics was that I think it was around like the 1920s that a lot of those discoveries were made in the kind of the quantum revolution. The implications of quantum physics and those discoveries are absolutely groundbreaking and paradigm shattering. And if you look at all those guys that were the founders of quantum mechanics, they all became, not all of them, but a lot of them became mystics.
Yeah.
If you look at their writings.
Yeah.
They got really into mysticism. And
I mean, how would you not? You're like, oh, right. I observed this thing and suddenly, you know, it showed me the path that it took. And before then it was just like a blob of possibility, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, how could you, having those kind of discoveries, how could you not start to understand the fundamental oneness of reality? Now, we fast forward a century later, now to the 2020s, our kind of conception of reality and our kind of materialist paradigm that we understand the world through hasn't actually really caught up to those implications. Like, right. The discoveries of quantum mechanics were a century ago.
I know.
Still, the implications of it haven't actually fully been fathomed and kind of integrated into our understanding of the world. And even science's understanding of how it understands the world hasn't really fully grappled with those implications. So when we talk about like a new leap and when we talk about like a paradigm shift coming, I actually see a lot of this paradigm shift coming in the fact that we're going to be catching up with the discoveries from a century ago. Like when you look at history, groundbreaking revelations and scientific discoveries, it often took a very, very long time for those to be fully integrated and fully kind of permeated into culture and permeated into mainstream views. So that's something I think about a lot, of how interesting it is that like what quantum mechanics was discovering was that the observer and the observed actually are, they're completely entangled. There actually isn't a separation between those two. But the dominant perspective and paradigm that we grow up in here is that we're just a separate object that's living in this world full of separate objects. Like,
right.
Look, computer right here. I am this human body trace, and there's this computer, and these are just two separate objects. But quantum mechanics shows that's not true.
Exactly.
Every object we're looking at, we're completely intertwined with. So all these discoveries are really showing us that the seeming separation that we thought was there actually isn't there. So this was almost like unveiling of this illusory separation. And as we start to dive deeper into this, and as we start to really grapple with what all this stuff was saying, I think we're going to, as a culture, start to understand the fundamental oneness behind everything, and see that this idea of separation that has informed so much of our world and so much of our worldviews actually isn't true. Integrate these discoveries into our own life, like when you're looking at a sunset, when you were looking at something that really moves you, like really feeling in that moment that whatever you're looking at isn't something separate from you. That's happening in your awareness. That's happening within you. That thing doesn't exist without you. There is no you and then that thing over there. That thing doesn't exist independently of you. That thing relies on your very existence. So you kind of engage in life in that way, which everything, you're a part of everything you're experiencing, everything you're looking at, for the simple fact that it's happening within your own awareness. You're the observer and all this observed. And there's a fundamental connection there's a fundamental connection and oneness in that. And that, I mean, the amount of wonder and awe that inspires.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a whole napkin full of notes now. Okay. So I'm going to start with
think it was like, he said an Eleanor Roosevelt quote or something. Maybe it's not her. She's the one who's like, people aren't thinking about you at all. Like, it's worse than you think. People aren't thinking about you at all. It's not that one. Anyway, it's something around like the our biggest fear is actually how powerful we are.
Oh, Marianne Williamson. Marianne
Williamson. Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Anyway, awesome. Go Marianne Williamson. So she's taking another run at the presidency. So anyway, okay. So with that being said, what if we accept the fundamental premise that we are creator? Not the I of the ego is the creator, but we beingness are the creator because we're not separate from anything else. And look at how powerful that actually makes every thought we have, every word we say to somebody else, every word we say to ourselves, every action we take. That's actually a lot of responsibility. So I think on some level, with the way, and I think our egos are designed perfectly because they're designed so that we can have awakening experiences. They're not trying to prevent us from seeing who we truly are. They're trying to give us enough contraction that we finally get sick and tired enough of believing that separation story and actually be willing to blossom into what's really true. So a couple ways in which, on a more practical level, this came up as you both were talking. Number one, when we're in what our healer calls an interesting point of view, which is any perspective that any one of us takes but isn't capital T truth according to creator or source, right? Just our personal interesting point of view that contains judgment, fear, whatever, right? We're in a contracted state. Do you ever see, do you ever experience wonder and awe from that interesting point of view? You're judging someone else, you're making a comment. No,
right?
You're fixed, you're certain, right? And hope this doesn't offend our Jesus lovers out there, because we're actually, if you hang on for part three of my napkin, we're going to get to the word. Jesus is way bigger than what the church made him out to be. They made Jesus a contracted, interesting point of view that had a solid story.
Yes.
And once something has a solid story, according to quantum physics, once it is solidified, it is so much harder to see the possibilities, to turn it back into a wave of potentiality, to expand it back into, it actually takes kind of like an explosion or something, right? To take density and move it back into possibility. So once enough people focused, which is what the people who have been a part of the church's version of a Jesus movement for the last hundreds, if not, you know, thousand plus years have done, is so many humans on earth have focused onto this one story that it solidified this one story of Jesus, and relatively few people as a percentage got to see actual Jesus.
Yes.
Because everyone was fixated on one particular version of what they thought was true. The opposite of that is presence. It's awareness, it's complete openness. And when you're in that state, anything can spark wonder and awe. Doing the dishes, smelling a flower, getting the biggest surprise news of your life, that XYZ thing that you've been waiting to have happen, happened. Like, it could be big or small, but it can strike wonder and awe. It could be nothingness. It could be somethingness. It could be the moon that you see every night, but for some reason, in a moment, it just strikes you and it hits you and it's that feeling, right? So when not constricted into a particular dense perspective that we are unwavering from, a litany of possibilities exists. And when a litany of possibilities exists in me, and I then relate to you or Trace from that litany of possibilities, and you're in a place of the litany of possibilities, emergent properties can happen.
That's so good.
New things, new creations, new ideas, new solutions. What if we did X, Y, or Z? What if it was possible? How do we solve this? All of a sudden, there's like this huge playing field where the universe can just dance upon us and bring us like the fruit of possibility.
So good.
Point number two.
Amazing.
The modality called theta healing is something that I was trained in about 10 years ago, which is crazy. And fundamentally, its whole premise is that we can take our brain into the theta state, which is our knowing connection to oneness. And it's also where our brain is no longer divided into conscious awareness, which is about 10%, and subconscious, which is 90%. It actually brings those things together so that we can actually change our own subconscious beliefs. But the key to all of it, so of course you have to learn the meditation on how to go into a theta state, not terribly hard at all. But once you learn that, truly the key to all of it is witnessing.
Mm-hmm.
So you command a healing, but then you witness it happen. And so if you think to yourself, oh, this is woo-woo, this is faith healing, this is whatever, sure, that's fine. Call it what you want. And quantum physics says,
yeah,
for something to change, it needs a witness. And so if I want to change this programming that's in my subconscious from the time I was 3 and something traumatic happened or whatever, we all have early childhood traumas because we're all learning. We're blank slates in our subconscious when we're really young. I mean, I would add a little asterisk that we inherit stuff and we bring stuff from past lives.
Right.
But generally speaking, on this brain, we're imprinting, and we're tiny.
Right.
We're helpless. And so much imprints. And if we never re-examine that, then we're operating. It would be like, I mean, I was born in 79, so my first home computer was an Apple II Plus. If I was still operating my business on an Apple II Plus right now, we'd be in trouble. There would be no business. There'd be no Word documents. There'd be no email. There'd be no nothing, right? So we have to upgrade our operating systems. And one of the ways we can upgrade our operating systems is by witnessing the subconscious belief, asking for a change, witnessing the change, setting an intention, going out to the world, witnessing something happen and go like, oh my gosh, this is normally a situation where I decide I'm a piece of crap because I didn't
right.
listen to whatever. I should have known this was good. Wow, that's heavy. What else is possible? And then all of a sudden we've witnessed our way into a new reality because we actually put a pause and we added a question mark. We removed density, we removed certainty, and we opened it possibility again. So then that takes us to Jesus. It's not that anybody is trying to take Jesus away from anybody else. What it is that Jesus and the energy that he brought and brings, along with so many other, not tons, but plenty of other sages and healers and mystics mm-hmm. and visionaries, bring this fundamental energy of change to our planet. It's like in a being, there's able to be a massive, massive ripple effect out of that one person's being. And those are the stories that I think the Bible was trying to tell about Jesus when it was in its original form before unhealthy power got a hold of it.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of people around the Jesus movement. Well, they were the Jesus movement. Because they made it a movement, right? You say you need your first follower to have a movement. Mary Magdalene is one that's very near and dear to my heart. These were people who saw and felt and understood the mysticism, understood the oneness, understood the awareness that Jesus was trying to bring, and were able to, in their own ways, articulate some of it, and then we're trying to tell stories of it, and it was an oral tradition, and then at some point in time, stuff got written down. At some point in time, certain stuff was accepted and certain wasn't. At some point in time, a Bible was made, and then another point in time, it's been revised and edited and revised and edited, and all of a sudden, out the chute, we have some amount of certainty
right.
that this is exactly what happened. It's exactly truth. It's literal. And it misses the entire mark that Jesus was truly a bringer of higher consciousness.
Right. That is such good stuff. I love it. And I love how quickly you process that. And
I think it was just that the idea of, wow, it my observation plays such a huge part in the whole thing. And what am I observing? What am I paying attention to? What am I ignoring? What if, you know, and then collectively, what are we, you know, paying attention to and ignoring? So I have to bring up Rupert Spira before we go, because he shifted everything. Like, his work completely shifted everything. And the thing that really caused that shift, what it was just little simple things that he said along the way. And one of the things was, and just the most obvious thing was, which was, scientists have come to the conclusion that life, matter evolved, and at some point, suddenly we had consciousness. And then he argues the exact opposite based on our own experience of, no, what if the entire thing is consciousness, and out of consciousness we then have matter? That, to me, shifts everything in your in how you even observe what's in front of you, because you are able to see it in a brand new way. It is connected to you. It is part of your beingness. We're all, there is no separation, basically. And so I was like, do you guys have any favorite Rupert Spira quotes? And so I wrote a couple of mine down, but I didn't know if you guys had any favorites, but I love him. I just absolutely love him. If you've ever watched any of his YouTube videos, he just has such a gentle spirit and such he's a gift, and his ability to articulate and to talk to people in such a way that is not threatening. It's just very gentle, and it just, you're able to just kind of sink into it, I guess. Has that been your experience? Because I just, there aren't, I mean, I would put him, you know, near the top in terms of some of the teachers that we have today that really have the potential to really make some of these shifts and changes that we are hoping to see in our lifetime.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We actually saw him in person in Berkeley in, what was that, October?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. He's really changed my life. The simplicity at which he speaks, and he has such a way of just getting at the truth of things in such like a simple, clear, and like poetic way.
Yeah.
And it's been amazing to watch how much his career has blown up too. I mean, he is like, his YouTube and his books, they just have like gone crazy, especially since
the pandemic.
I really feel like he's had a huge ripple effect and like a huge transformational effect on consciousness. Okay, so my favorite quote, it's on my phone, let me find it, because I don't want to butcher it. It's a quote about love, because I think love is such an important, it's so important to talk about love when we talk about consciousness, awareness, being, quantum physics. I think sometimes...
I wonder if we have the same one. I wonder if it's the same one, because I have one as well.
Okay.
I'll read yours and you can tell me if it's close.
Yeah, please.
Love or friendship is the recognition that your being is shared. When you feel that you love your children, that feeling of love is the recognition that your being is shared.
I love that one. I love that one. That wasn't
really beautiful.
That wasn't mine. Mine is love is the natural condition of all experience before thought has divided it into a multiplicity and diversity of objects, selves, and others.
Ooh,
and that part about love being the natural condition of experience, when we come to the fact that our being is one with everything, everything is an expression of our being, that is actually the natural condition of experience. Love, experiencing love, is not some far out metaphysical thing that we have to achieve that involves going to, you know, multidimensional realities. Love is actually the very natural condition of what we are, natural condition of reality. And that, coming back to being one with everything,
yeah,
is the definition of love. And love is actually the dissolution of separation, and that's actually naturally how things are, is a complete paradigm shift, because we usually live our lives in this feeling of separation, and love is like something that we experience at times, but actually flipping that on its head, and actually the love is the constant thing. Love is the natural experience. And actually an altered state of consciousness is when we're not experiencing love. Love is actually the very natural resting place.
Right.
So that's the one that means the most to me. And I meditate on that quote of just when I meditate, I feel love in the dissolution of separation and feeling my oneness with everything that I'm experiencing.
His analogy of the TV screen was the one that did it for me.
Yeah, that one's great. Yeah. That analogy really moved me when I first heard it, and I remember contemplating it for a long time.
Yeah. So, like, I take my daughter to play practice, and then I'll just sit in the car and do work, and I'll meditate on that, and I'll be, like, trying to, like, I think what he tried to do was, like, say, like, imagine that you can almost, like, everything around you is transparent, and then kind of, like, see through it as just this, you know, field of energy that we're all, like, connected to, and it's so cool. I think it's amazing. So I love it. It's amazing.
It's so fun to play with consciousness that way too, because I think a lot of people are so in the grind and in the story and in their own suffering that there's no play.
Yeah.
Going full circle back to wonder and awe, like, play is one of the doorways to wonder and awe. Like, lightening up, loosening up.
Yeah.
And part of that is loosening up our grip on even, like, just taking our eyeballs out of focus.
Yeah.
You know, we're not so fixated on, like, okay, right now I'm looking at a downspout, or I'm looking at a bush, or I'm looking at, and it's like, no, you kind of just, like, let the whole thing blur. And then my attention's brought to the power line out there. And, like, whoa, electricity, somehow, somewhere electricity is created, and hopefully soon that'll be on my roof. Solar panels, but somewhere electricity is created. It is, in essence, on a wire beamed
right
my house so that I could plug this computer in and have this conversation with you. And oh, by the way, we're also beaming something called Wi-Fi,
right?
Storing our data in something called clouds. I mean, that's one of the coolest things to me about technology is that if you're paying attention, it's like things are even named overtly, like pointing to the dissolution of the fixed reality. You know what I mean? Like, my photos are stored in a cloud. That concept, they could have called it a file cabinet, you know? Like, I'm glad they didn't. But it's just so fascinating because everything starts to point to how goofy it all is in some ways. We were looking at the, like, in the metaverse, you can, like, go wear the goggles. I mean, I know I sound like I'm 80 years old. You can wear the goggles. You can sit courtside at a basketball game, and you could pay a bunch of money to sit courtside. And I don't think the game actually happened. Like,
I'm still confused on that.
I don't get it. It's a game in real time that's just being, like, also shown in the metaverse, or if they're making up like a you know,
if you watch the highlights. Or
even, like, I don't even know, but supposedly, like, LeBron's sweat will fly at you or whatever.
Oh my gosh,
that's crazy. And I mean, it seems to me, like, in my interesting point of view, it seems to me ridiculous to pay for a courtside seat in this, like, faux reality that LeBron's gonna sweat on me. Like, I don't really want that in real life anyway. But the point of all of it is it's actually fantastic because it's starting, the ridiculousness of all of it, it's starting to help us see actually all of this that we thought is so solidified and certain is also just as ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's not all meant to be taken so freaking seriously. And maybe what we need are companies like Meta that are creating this metaverse and then charging people a bunch of money, or making NFTs and, you know, all sorts of goofy things. God forbid you put your life savings and you can't pay your mortgage anymore into something like that. But if you've got money to play around with, like, who cares? It's not all that serious.
Let's have some fun.
Right.
Okay, let's have some fun because I've got three final questions. These are fun questions. Okay. What fills you with wonder and awe these days?
I'm going to go with music right now.
Music?
Yeah.
Mm. I think Spring Blossoms.
Ooh, that's good. Okay, back to music.
let's imagine you wake up tomorrow morning and your digital music is gone. All your iTunes gone, no longer exists. No Wi-Fi, no ability to get to iTunes, Pandora, Spotify. They no longer exist. They're gone. Everything's gone. Your only option is to go to a music store where they still sell records, CDs, and cassettes. What's the first album you are most definitely going to buy as soon as you get in there?
Oh, great question. I'm going to buy an album from this rapper, singer called Yeast from Oregon. He is the most creative artist I've ever heard within the hip-hop genre. He's really setting and dictating what I think the sound is going to sound like for the next decades to come. And his music so embodies infinite being and infinity in its creativity and uniqueness and specialness. And yeah, I can't get enough of his music. So yeah.
Oh, cool. I have to check it out.
Same. Except I'll probably buy one of the other CDs since we've been
living. We're both really big fans.
That's cool. That's cool. Okay. Final question. One of your favorite shows that you've binged or watched, if you could either, and it's done, it's already wrapped up. If you could bring a show back for either a reboot or pick up where they left off and keep going, what would it be? Which show?
I'm going with Game of Thrones just so they can finish the last season. Game of Thrones is still my favorite show of all time, despite how badly they fumbled the last season.
Yes.
So if I could do this hypothetical reality and get a better ending for it, I absolutely would choose Game of Thrones.
For me, it's Grace and Frankie.
Have you that's cute. That's cool. That's cool.
I adore them.
Where can people find out more about you? I know you have Open Aware. I just checked to see if anybody else had interviewed you on a podcast and saw that you have another podcast called
Brontide.
Yes.
Yes, Brontide is our creative experiment with our friend Joel.
That looks so cool.
He's fantastic. But yeah, www.open-aware.com, and within that you can see we have classes, sessions, community, etc. So we would absolutely love to connect with anybody who's listening. Pretty easy to find us there. So
that is awesome. Thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed this. This was fun. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah.
Thank you.